This is Jason Albert, and you are listening to Nordic Nation from Faster Skier. Kevin Bolger, at 26 years old, has emerged as a key part of the U.S. ski team's evolving sprint roster. He was recently renominated to the U.S. ski team's B team for a second consecutive year. This is still a timely interview. However, we reached Bolger when temperatures were much cooler on March 4th. And he was prepping for the remainder of his ski season in his brother's adopted home of Norway. In this episode, we discuss his time developing as a multi-sport athlete and his sinuous journey to the World Cup.
I'm currently in Kongsberg, Norway, which is about an hour and a half southwest of Oslo.
Okay, and how did you end up there in particular?
My brother, actually. I kind of follow my brother all around Norway, I guess. But he's living here now with his girlfriend. It works out that it's a pretty good spot to be right now, especially after World Championships and Drammen coming up. I'm only about 30 minutes from Drammen, so it works out really well.
So what is your brother doing in Norway?
He just finished up getting his PhD up in Trondheim at Olympiatoppen, in NTNU. And now he's living down here and working out of a littler area south of here called Bø Telemark, where he's brewing beer and cider.
All right. So he's in Norway. And okay, well, let's take a step back. So you sort of came to, I would say, like, you were on like my radar, and we'll kind of flesh this out a bit, but you had won a sprint national championships, and I think it was Classic back in 2017 at Soldier Hollow. And I remember it's Classic because it was a real funky day for folks and kick. You were on the Super Tour last year. I think I have that right. And we're doing quite well. And in Lahti, believe after the Olympics last year, in a sprint, you had a great result. So before we get to all the kind of glory wearing stars and stripes, I am curious, like, you grew up in the Midwest, and what was your, you know, was it kind of a typical, like, you grew up in a club program, skied high school as you developed?
Yeah. I mean, I started skiing when I was, you know, in third grade. And it wasn't kind of my only focus. I mean, I was kind of had my fingers in a lot of different pies, I guess, where I was playing basketball and playing soccer and football. I was kind of doing all of it. And then in high school, it wasn't a real recognized sport by our high school, but I still, you know, still joined our high school team, I guess. And that was my first, you know, real big involvement in it with the Lakeland Nordic Ski Club.
Okay. And so when you say Lakeland Nordic Ski Club, is it sort of like a non-varsity sport at the high school? So they call it a club or something, or is this like a formal club that's, you know, dialed in on waxing and all that?
No, it is a recognized, sport at the high school. It is like a varsity sport. But I don't think it at the time, I think it does now, but it didn't fall under the WIAA Wisconsin sport program actual umbrella for sports, I think, if I remember that correct.
Okay. And how'd that go for you in high school?
It was great. I mean, as I kind of approached high school, it was always basketball and skiing. And in high school, those two sports overlapped. So coming into my freshman year, I guess at the time was faced with a difficult decision. I look back now and it's a pretty clear decision of skiing was the clear choice, not basketball. And so, yeah, I obviously started skiing. And from my freshman year to senior year, I was on varsity my 4 years. My junior, senior year, I was back-to-back Wisconsin high school state champion. It went really well. And then as I started to focus a little bit more and more on skiing, I started to travel over to Minneapolis, Minnesota, and train with a summer club out of Forest Lake called Nordic Works with Dino Johnson.
Okay. And how tall are you?
About 6'4".
6'4". Okay. What I do remember distinctly is I met your dad at at Soldier Hollow when you won that championship. So I remember just kind of standing near the mix zone and I could hear him talking about a Kevin Bolger. I was like, oh, that must be his dad. And I introduced myself. Now, are you taller than your dad? Because I remember he was one tall dude.
Yeah, yeah. I'm the tallest in the family. Not by much, but yeah, I am.
Okay. All right. And so how did you end up getting – you skied at University of Utah. And that is – you know, that's a tough place to, one, even get recognized to be recruited, let alone being able to ski there. You know, so how did that come about for you?
I mean, a lot of it was with approaching post-high school, a lot of talking with Dino Johnson, the club coach out of Minnesota, and also my high school coach, Kent Scoville. But Dino Johnson was the one who kind of brought up doing a potential postgraduate year with the Sun Valley Ski Education Foundation, which was myself and my parents, we were all very clueless at the time, not really sure what was happening. But we did know that a lot of skiers in college were not your typical American skier. You know, they were coming from Norway, Sweden, Germany, you know, et cetera. And they were coming in as freshmen when they were, you know, 20 years old or older. And there is just it's not easy to compete against those guys when you're 18, and just the level of development in the U.S. is not the same as it is here in other countries. So that was my pathway. I mean, my parents were behind me, you know, and I was super motivated with my skiing to want to take it to the next level. So that's when I decided to go to Sun Valley, and not only do 1 year, but I actually ended up taking 2 years off from college just to ski and develop.
Gotcha. Okay. So I actually didn't know you took 2 years off. So, you know, which is really interesting when you think about, you know, cause it's not necessarily like the buzz at Faster Skier currently, but like, you know, several years ago, you know, the debate of like, should kids go to college if they have aspirations of skiing on the World Cup or internationally, or should they try and get in with a top tier gold team situation or APU or Stratton and forego the college situation for the time being. So what was the calculus with the second year?
I mean, it was partially me and my just dragging my feet a little bit on applying to colleges and getting myself out there. But at the same time, it was wanting to develop a little bit more as a skier. And Chris Mallory, my coach now on the gold team, was also my coach when I was a postgraduate with Sun Valley. And he was as well kind of behind it a second year as well. I think he knew I took a really big step forward in the right direction that year. But also, if I really wanted to go to college at like a Utah and perform, maybe that second year was necessary. And I don't think after that first year, maybe I had the recognition from, you know, a top school like Utah or to get recruited.
You know, and I know there are tons of kids from that Sun Valley program or the West that head east for college. And it's definitely a different culture skiing wise when it comes to like East Coast college scene and West Coast college scene. Did you even consider going to the East for school, or were you set on the Utah's CUs of the world?
I was pretty set on going West. I mean, there was a little contact with some coaches out East, but I mean, it was slim to none, if anything. As I drove out West to Sun Valley for my first year off, I kind of did I toured Boulder and, I looked at Utah, I looked at MSU, and those were kind of my three main focuses for skiing after high school.
This debate does come up, and I probably won't edit this out because Zoe Roy is a good friend of mine, but you know, she and I have spoken a bit in the past about like, you know, hey, what are your thoughts? She went to Utah, and what are your thoughts about, you know, the recruitment from Scandinavia when it comes to Nordic athletes and whether or not that displaces American athletes from possible NCAA spots? You know, it's sort of a loaded question, but you know, kind of curious to get her thoughts. And I, you know, hopefully she won't get mad if I don't edit this out, but I recall her saying something like, you know, she felt like for her own athlete development, it was fantastic to have that caliber of athlete to train with every day and to compete against. So when you were at Utah, you know, how did that play out for you? You know, having all of a sudden, not necessarily all of a sudden, but, you know, you're being thrown in with kids, young adults who may have been on the cusp of making the Norwegian team, and now you're training with them for NCAA competition.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a very touchy subject, but I think a lot of people have their own opinions on it. But for me, I agree kind of with Zoe that for me as a skier, it only helped me become better having these skiers around me. It pushed me. It definitely made me more driven in skiing. So, yeah, I can see how people think that, yeah, maybe they're taking away scholarships and your NCAA spots. But, I mean, at the end of the day, I think it should only be a motivational pusher. And for me, that's what it was.
I think I recall you saying, and I have done background research, but I haven't gone back and listened to the interview we did, like, what seems like, you know, eons ago.
Yeah, exactly.
So I recall you saying at Soldier Hollow, we were sitting in like what appeared to be like a kindergarten classroom. I don't know if you remember, the seats were really teeny. And I remember like you were sitting in this kindergartner seat with your knees like almost hitting your chin. You probably don't recall this, but...
No, I absolutely remember. I mean, okay. It's definitely one of those highlights that I'll never
forget. Okay. Well, I just was like, okay, this is kind of weird. This dude's like 6'4 and sitting in a teeny little chair. But I recall you saying that you had never podiumed at an NCAA race before. And, you know, is that... I have not gone back to fact check that. I'm sure that's right. But is that true? I mean, had you not podiumed at an NCAA level race?
Yeah, that's correct.
So what was your, you know, NCAA career like, you know, at a place like Utah?
Yeah, I mean, for an American coming in, at first it was make the NCAA team all 4 years, which I did accomplish freshman, you know, sophomore, junior, senior year. And then it wasn't until my junior year and senior year when I became I finished in the top 10 and became All-American. And that was just twice, once my junior year and once my senior year.
And while this is going on, right, I mean, you're getting what type of interest or any type of exposure are you getting to, say, U.S. ski team camps or junior level camps?
At the time, I don't think I was getting any. I mean, there was, you know, the typical fall camp that the U.S. ski team does in Park City. But then again, you know, I was at Utah and it was convenient to get there, and they're open to having, you know, sometimes the Utah team come up and train with them for some of the sessions. So yeah, I had a little exposure there. And also a little bit in Bend camp as well. But that's really about it. There was no real direct contact between myself and the team.
In terms of like talking about when did you end up going over to Norway, and, you know, I guess when did your brother start studying over there, and when was he like, hey man, you need to come over here and expose yourself to this level of training? Was that concurrent with college or was that post-college?
No, it's concurrent. I mean, I think it was after, I don't remember the exact year, but I want to say it was the summer after my sophomore year of college. Cause okay. I think I spent my freshman year out there, full year, and then I went to Norway after my sophomore year, and I've been going back every summer since.
Okay, and so that's what I've heard. I mean, I've heard from people, it's like, and mostly like, say, from my kid, who's more of a social, you know, on social media following you guys than I am. Yeah. He's like, oh yeah, this Kevin Bolger guy, I don't think he's around Sun Valley. I think he's in Norway all summer. So that's been sort of your paradigm?
Yeah, I've been going over for, I mean, you're allotted whatever 90 days in a said country. Yeah. So with, you know, I'm staying within that, but yeah, anywhere from, you know, I think two summers ago, I was there for about 90 days, anywhere from a month to 3 months.
And so I kind of got two threads going here, right? To NCAA, but like flipping over to Norway, as you know, you obviously have, you know, a conduit there. Your brother, I'm assuming at that point, was in Trondheim. Is that right?
Yep. Yeah. He was studying still at the time. Okay.
So there's, you know, Trondheim seems to be the hotbed of like one academic research going on like things as minute as how to max, you know, engineering a ski to, you know, how to eke out 0.1% more power double poling or whatever. There's a lot of cool academic research going on there. On top of that, there's also like, you know, I think Nortug was based out of there for a while. And I can't believe his name is the guy with the pink poles. I'm embarrassed.
Yeah. Clavo.
Yeah. So he's based out of there. There's a lot of guys, a lot of fast women there, you know? So as a sophomore, what type of exposure are you getting? Like, who are you training with and jumping in with there during the summer?
So I was pretty lucky to have my brother over there, because he was doing a lot of his studying at Olympia Toppen, where a lot of the Norwegian national team athletes do their testing. And at the time, I know he was working more with Eldar Roning at the time, but he was living, my brother Connor was living in the same, I guess, like apartment complex as Niklas Dierhaug. And that was my first training partner when I was in Norway, was Niklas Dierhaug. And I'll never forget showing up to my, you know, I met him outside the first morning we were going to go train, and he just kind of looks at me. He's like, "Hey, so are you in shape?" And I was like, yeah, I think so. He's like, "All right, cool, let's go then." And I was just like, "All right, here we go." And that was my first exposure with training over there with those guys. It was pretty.
Well, what does that mean? Like, are you in shape? Like, what did he have in mind that day?
I think he just was hoping that I could keep up. I mean, I don't really know. But yeah, that was kind of just like, yeah, I was like, oh, all right, shit, this could be a hard workout. But it was just, I think it was an easy, you know, I think we just skied for 2 hours pretty easy, but, or easy for him. I think I was probably working a little harder.
Right. You know, superficially, you know, when you, cause this question comes up all the time, it's like, okay, what makes Norway amazing? They obviously have, and I've heard this a lot this past week talking to athletes, are like, how do you compete with a Norway, like in terms of making skis when, you know, they can throw a bunch of resources at lots of different skis and just lots of folks. But you know, as you spent those numerous summers over there, And you were thinking about your own development, and I'm sure you were like a sponge learning from these folks. What did make the difference for you, and what kept you going back to say Trondheim, you know, rather than staying stateside?
I mean, I was definitely trying to learn as much as I could every session, but I don't know if I can say there's one specific thing that has been clicking for me, and that's why I keep going back. I think there's a lot, but also it's worked for me. It worked that one summer, you know, and I went back a second summer, it worked again. And so that's kind of, I guess, why I keep doing it, because it is working for me. And I think there's also something that's to be said about getting a majority of my training maybe at sea level versus staying out west all summer and doing a huge load of my training blocks at altitude.
How's your Norwegian?
It's not great. Luckily, all their English over here is really good.
This is true. How's your brother's Norwegian?
He's quite good, actually. Yeah, he's a lot better than he used to be.
Okay. All right. That's funny. And I think all their classes, like over in Trondheim, are the classes all in English? Or they can be?
I think most of them. I know if you attend school over in the ski town of Meråker, which is not so far from Trondheim, that I think they give you like 3 months to learn Norwegian, and then all their classes switch to Norwegian.
Okay. That'd be a little grim for me.
Yeah, it'd be tough.
So, you know, I'm curious just to kind of dig, you know, flesh out the Norwegian situation a little bit. You know, I'm assuming that, you know, your brother has access to all these testing equipment, roller ski treadmill, and you know, I think in one of the emails, or, you know, I only have like maybe 2 emails from your brother, but he spoke a little bit about, I think, you know, just looking at you on a roller ski treadmill and having that opportunity to really kind of start breaking down technique. Yeah, I am curious, like being a taller guy, you're 6'4", and I don't know what your like ape index is, like the ratio of your arms to your general height. But like, what sort of technique things were you, you know, getting super geeky, what sort of technique things were you working on over there and trying to fine tune?
I think the biggest and the most eye-opening for me when I got over there was how much double pulling that they did. And I think that correlates to, you know, obviously classic skiing and your skate skiing. In the first two summers I was there, I mean, a lot of my training was all double pull focused, which then strength-based, I was doing a lot more core. And I think, and because I am taller, for anyone who has a taller build, I think just increasing your core load is super important to protect your back and just become stronger. But the double pulling was a huge eye-opener for me. And I think that's kind of been the trend all over the past few years, is the increase in double pulling that athletes are doing.
I'm just curious, how, when you were in high school, you're 6'4", what was your growth curve like? Were you, you know, like 5'6" as a freshman and shot up to 6'4" by the time you were, say, a senior? What was that? Yeah, what was that like?
I think I grew pretty steadily. I don't think I had that one just massive spurt that I can remember, at least.
Okay.
I was kind of always, you know, when you're in a class and they say line up from tallest to shortest, I was always the tallest. That's kind of how I remember it.
You know, again, like, came onto my radar. I remember, you know, distinctly, it was kind of a wet, snowy day, kind of zero-y conditions at Soldier Hollow, 2017 National Championships, and it was a classic skate or a classic sprint. And you were in a heat with Dakota Black Horse Von Jess, who's a local guy here from Bend. And you two were off the front maybe by the second climb, is what I recall. I don't know if you can visualize any of this.
Yeah, absolutely.
And coming down, there's like a descent that comes into that kind of real punchy, on this particular day, it was like a herringbone hill. And then there's the final descent into the stadium. I don't know if you can kind of...
Yeah, I can envision.
So I remember you maybe and Dakota coming over that top hill kind of together, but you certainly, you got a gap. I was a little bit like, had to go back and look at the start list and look up your name and be like, who's that guy? And through the course of the day, you obviously proceeded, you know, semifinals and then won the final. And I think there were a couple of Canadians on the podium with you, if I recall that correctly. First national championship, and certainly the first time that you were on my radar, and I think a lot of people's radar. You know, I'm kind of curious if you can kind of reflect on that day and maybe what that did for your confidence. And you had mentioned that up to that point, you had not been even on an NCAA, not even, but you hadn't been on an NCAA podium at that point.
No. So that would have been, I think that was my senior year.
Yeah.
When I was at the U, but yeah, like you're saying, it's just a super funky day of skiing. But when all that kind of boils down, it's everyone is, for me, it's always just block out everything else and just go ski fast. The rest will happen. And of course, things have to align on that said day, and the wax has to be right. Your body has to feel right. But that was a day that everything was just clicking perfectly for me. And I think I remember telling you too, like, in before I start each heat, I'll always kind of look at who I'm competing with.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And that was kind of one, I think I had Dakota and maybe two of my heats going into the final. I can't quite remember, but he was always one. I was like, all right, let's get behind Dakota. I'll settle in. I'll relax. And then, you know, it's sprinting. You take it as it comes. And then, yeah, it all came perfectly well. And all the paths led to the final. And I think I remember also that I think I was the only American in the A final.
Oh yeah. I should look that up, but yeah, there were not a lot of them. I mean, that was what I noticed as well. I remember that I don't even think there were any APU athletes in the top 30.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but that could be right.
There was something crazy, you know, again, funky day. So that said, funky day, at this point, you know, you've been in arguably the highest caliber collegiate program. Sorry, CU, but a super high caliber, you know, college program. You've won a national championship. Are you thinking to yourself, that was just a funky day? I mean, like, the wax was funky for people. Or, you know, how are you processing that and thinking about like what your capacities are?
No, I mean, nothing to that. For me, that day was as surprising. I mean, that sprint was also the first sprint that the RMISA considered to be part of a college race. And I remember looking at Kevin Sweeney before the qualifier, and I think that's what they use as their college race. And I said, today's the first sprint race for college. I'm going to go out there. I'm going to win it. And then I won it. And then afterwards, I looked at him again. I'm like, I'm going to make it a double win day, and I'm going to win this whole thing. And my confidence was high that day, and you know, I wanted to win. That's every race I want to win. That's just how it is.
No, I think that's cool. And it's funny, that's sort of coming back to me now, that when I'm hearing you say that sitting in the kindergartner chair, you know. So, you know, that sort of mindset, like, I'm going to go in, I'm going to win it. And then taking it a step further, I'm going to win the whole thing. Had you already, you know, I'm assuming that in Norway, sports psychology is sort of part of a lot of athletes' normal routine. But at that point, were you actively like working on sports psychology or reading about it in any capacity?
Not individually, but I think it was my junior year. The whole ski team at Utah started implementing sports psychology. I think it was every Friday we met with one that was, you know, that worked with all athletics at the university. And I think that, you know, I think that helped all of us individually and as a team kind of move forward mentally.
Okay. Do you like now, how do you tap into that?
I don't think I really have an answer for it. I take every day as it comes and every race as it comes. And I just try and do my own thing more or less. And I block out all that. I know there's people dig into the criteria of all the stuff and the rules and all this and that. And it's, for me, it's you ski fast, everything happens and we'll fall into place.
Okay. So that's a great segue into, because I do hear that a lot from people, is like, you know, folks who are kind of obsessing over what, you know, they pull up the PDF or they're mining, like, what is the criteria? What's the points list? Where do I stand? The flip side of that is the real basic, like you just said, ski fast when you have to, and things sort of take care of themselves. That said, skiing fast when you have to. It looks here like, and I do know this, but I'm just, sometimes I don't always trust the FIS site. Your first World Cup opportunity was last March in Lahti. Is that correct?
Yep. Yeah, that was my first World Cup.
Okay. And so that was the first weekend after Pyeongchang, and you placed 11th overall. I'm curious, you know, can you walk us through that day a little bit and how you approached it? I mean, I can't imagine that was a little bit of like a little bit of a shock in terms of just like race culture.
Yeah, I mean, for me that day, a top 30 was a win. Qualifying was going to be a win for me. So going into the day, it was actually kind of weird. I didn't really have any nerves. I wasn't nervous. I wasn't freaking out. So that kind of took me back a little bit. I was like, oh, shouldn't I be nervous for this? Shouldn't, you know, I hear all these stories of everyone just freaking out, and I was just, you know, cool as a cucumber, just kind of hanging out. And so I don't know if, I think that helped a lot. And also the fact that I did spend a lot of my summers training with, you know, the, like, you know, Nick Lostierog and Dietrich Tonseth and Emil Iversen. And so I knew some of these guys, and that they weren't as intimidating as I think maybe some people think they are. And I think that helped a lot for me that day. But I still remember crossing the line, and I think it was a FIS representative, I can't remember who, you know, looked at me and pointed like, hey, you know, you're 16th. And I kind of did I looked behind me like, who's this guy pointing to? Like, who is, he's like, no, you're 16th. And I was like, what is he talking? And I look on the big board in Lahti, and I was like, holy shit, I just qualified. Okay. Okay. And, you know, Matt Wickham's like, you know, you got to come over here for heat selection. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, what do I do with my bib? You know, in the US you give your bib and everything. He's like, what? He thought I was joking. I was like, who do I give it to? He's like, no, you keep it. You know, I was just like, it was all just, this whole new experience, which was incredible.
Oh, that is so funny. Like, you actually get to keep the bib as a, like a memento or something.
Oh yeah. I mean, every race that you do, you get to keep all your bibs.
Right.
You know,
right.
But for me, and, you know, coming from the US, you know, you give your bib back after every race, and then you almost sit around and wait an hour before you actually know if you qualified or not.
Right. You're looking for the parent volunteer who's like, hey kid, come over here. You don't want to be that person who doesn't turn their bib in and makes a scene. Oh, that is funny.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm actually pulled up the results here. And so you must have, you qualified in 16th, mm-hmm. and you came in fourth in your quarterfinal, I think. So yeah. You must have been a lucky loser.
Yeah, I was.
Okay. And then finished sixth in the semi, but outpaced the other sixth place skier in the other semi and finished 11th. Yeah. What was that like?
Being in that semifinal was pretty surreal. I mean, especially because in Lahti, you run out from kind of the, where you dump your clothing, you run out to the start. And I remember running out to the start, and Pellegrino was in front of me, and he just came from a silver medal at the Olympics. And Clavo was behind me, who was the, you know, who won the gold. And I was like, all right, you know, this is real. This is actually happening right now. All right. You know, that was when I think the nerves started to settle a little bit more, but at the same time, it was like, okay, you know, we're just going to go out and race. And I wish I would have been more aggressive, in that semifinal. But at the end of the day, I mean, it was one of the coolest days in my skiing career.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I mean, it's a cool venue, and, you know, they want guys to be stepping up. They want, you know, Andy Newell was clearly going to step away from the World Cup. I think that was sort of a known quantity at that point. And like any coach or program doing their due diligence, they're like, who's in the pipeline? Who's coming up? And here they are, kind of gifted a Kevin Bolger. And I mean that because it sounds to me like, you know, you're development has been a little bit atypical when we think of how a lot of skiers end up on the World Cup in the US. Correct me if I'm wrong in making that assumption, but what was the conversation like after that?
I mean, I think around the whole venue, I mean, I'll use the word stoke was incredibly high. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, I mean, I won the Continental Cup, the best Continental Cup skier of the day, you know, so I got the big slice of Gruyere cheese and did the whole thing. And yeah, I don't know if I really knew what was in store or what was going to happen next. It was kind of more or less, all right, you know, I hope this wasn't just a fluke. I mean, I want to do it again. And then I was able to repeat it and qualify again in Falun 2 weekends later, which was almost just as cool as Lahti, just because, you know, showing that I could do it twice, not only once, I could do it twice.
Right.
And that's when I think, you know, everything started to get more and more real for me.
And kind of jumping to this season, you know, again, it's just kind of a cursory look at results, and I don't really want to drill down on any, you know, oh, you came in this place or that place, but, you know, how would you describe, you know, your first full World Cup season, you know, ups and downs, what have been the struggles and what have been the highlights?
The whole thing, I mean, obviously it's not over yet, but it's been, and I think an awesome season. I've had a lot of fun. It's definitely been a new experience, and it's definitely been the biggest jump in competition and skiing for me. I mean, coming from the college circuit to the Super Tour and then straight into the World Cup, I mean, that's a pretty significant jump in level of competition and a big eye opener. And coming into the season, I didn't want to change anything from my training plan so much. Just, you know, I didn't want to, oh, you know, I'm going up against the big dogs. Now I got to increase my hours by X amount and do things differently and change all this stuff. So kept things relatively the same. Definitely changed a little bit, but yeah, of course I wish I'd be skiing some more semifinals and even finals, but I think, getting all the experience I've been getting this year is only going to bode well for me next year.
You placed 18th overall at your first World Championships. So I would assert that like the stage is not necessarily rattling you at all, and that, you know, you're able to deliver on a very, on you know, arguably the biggest day of the year for a lot of skiers because they're trying to peak for world championships. Do you leave, I mean, did you leave Seyfeld satisfied, or are you running through the races and thinking, oh, if I had just done this or done that or eked out a, you know, 0.2 seconds here or there?
No, I left Seyfeld incredibly happy and definitely satisfied with, I mean, it was my first championships, and to, you know, to come top 20, I think is pretty incredible. And I was very happy with how I skied. And I picked a pretty quick heat skiing with, you know, Ustiagov, Finn Hagenkroh, and Klabo. So I figured it'd be a fast heat, and I was hoping for the best. And, you know, I finished fourth, and the lucky loser time, I think, stood for maybe one heat, which, you know, was exciting. But no, at the end of the day, I mean, I came away happy finishing fourth. I mean, in that heat behind those three skiers who, you know, have all had World Cup wins and championship gold medals. I mean, it's for me to be knocking on that door. It's, you know, all I want to do is open it, and I'm hungry for more. And I want more.
Now you are in the program, right? You know, what would you say to, you know, skiers that have, you know, junior national aspirations or high school aspirations, college aspirations, you know, not necessarily like, yeah, I want to go kill it at the World Cup, because that's tough to pull off. But what would you say to athletes that, you know, are kind of wondering about their own pipeline and their own development and what you may have learned?
Yeah, I remember, I'm not going to name any names, but a coach, you know, saying to a group of skiers that, you know, if you want to be on the World Cup and you want to be racing, you have to follow the pipeline. You can't go to college. You know, you have to be a full-time Nordic skier, because that's just what it takes. And that's not what I did. I did a lot of other sports. I did, you know, I wasn't 100% focused on skiing until, you know, I was in high school, you know, later on. And then you gotta find the fun in anything you do. And if you're not having fun with something, I mean, I know that comes with any sport. Everyone says you got to have fun, but I think with skiing especially, it's so easy to get burnt out. So for me, being occupied in other sports was, I think, really big for me and helped me develop into a skier and athlete that I am today. And the fire is still burning, and I know a lot of that burns out in some athletes. So it's just finding what works for you. And no one has the right answer for each individual athlete. I think the athlete has to find that themselves. But at the end of the day, it's, you got to have fun with it. You just got to roll with it.
And I'm assuming you're probably having lots of fun.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it comes down to. I mean, I am having so much fun. There's not a day that goes by I regret what I'm doing. Every day has been a new adventure, and it just puts a smile on my face. And it's, yeah, being able to train with, you know, Simi Hamilton every day now, and Erik Bjornsson, and, you know, it's unbelievable for me. It's some of those guys, you know, looking up to as a developing skier coming up. So it's really cool to be able to, you know, ski side by side with these guys and, you know, call my teammates and also, you know, now my good friends.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Really appreciate it. I think we covered everything. Anything I missed?
Nah, I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Thanks, Kevin. And best of luck the next couple of weeks. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks, Jason. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Yep. You as well. Bye.
Thanks for listening.